people gradually. And we have made urgent appeal to the international community, please stop this genocide as soon as possible. This is a fight not against Palestinians. This is a fight against humanity all over the world. This must end and stop soon. This is like a shame on humanity to make camps like this, focusing people and concentrating people in like this way, more than 1 million in 25 kilometers, and killing them inside these camps by tanks and aircraft, military aircrafts, killing them inside these camps by snipers, killing these people inside this camp by preventing them from food access and medical access or health care access. This is insane. This madness must stop. Sister, I'm not just sad at what is happening here for Palestinians. I'm really sad at Israelis themselves, because their government is putting them at the dark side of the history. This must stop. And the international community and General Council must question the Israeli government. Please stop humiliating us. We are not animals to be collected in very poor concentration camps like this, killing us and destroying our houses. And by the way, you know what is the what makes these camps? When they destroyed our houses, when they destroyed our hospitals and health facilities, we have no homes, we have no houses, no infrastructure, nothing. So we escaped to the west of the city. Now this camp is 25 kilometers. We are not allowed to pass or cross this camp. If anyone crossed, he will be directly targeted. Sister, they have taken away every single human right from us. We are not allowed to eat. We are not allowed to dress. We are not allowed to buy shoes. We are allowed to eat a very minimum amount of food. 2 months ago, we were completely deprived from food. But now, just very minimum amount of food. We are not allowed to wear shoes. We are not allowed to eat vegetables. We are not allowed to eat fruits. We are dying.
Dr. Mohammed Sakhir, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Director of Nursing at the Nasser Medical Complex near Khan Yunis in the south of Gaza. Next up, the martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. We'll talk about the assassination of the conservative leader with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges. Stay with us. By Sunny Singh in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the fallout in the wake of the assassination of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk. The 22-year-old man accused of assassinating Kirk is scheduled to appear in court Tuesday. Tyler Robinson was detained Thursday night after he reportedly confessed to his father, who then reached out to a youth pastor who called the U.S. Marshals. Robinson is reportedly not cooperating with investigators and is being held under special watch in the Salt Lake City jail. Charlie Kirk was fatally shot while speaking at a campus event at Utah Valley University Wednesday. Authorities are still trying to determine a motive in the killing. Tyler Robinson grew up in a deeply Republican family. Authorities say Robinson engraved messages into bullet casings with references to various online and video game memes. Utah's Republican Governor Spencer Cox claimed Robinson had leftist ideology but did not share any evidence. There's also been speculation Robinson may have been influenced by a far-right movement known as Groypers, which is tied to the white nationalist Nick Fuentes. This is Utah Governor Cox speaking Friday.
I hear all the time that words are violence. Words are not violence. Violence is violence. And there is one person responsible for what happened here, and that person is now in custody and will be charged soon and will be held accountable.
While Utah Governor Spencer Cox said there's one person responsible for Charlie Kirk's killing, President Trump sent a very different message when he appeared on Fox News.
How do we fix this country? How do we come back together?
I'll tell you something that's going to get me in trouble, but I couldn't care less. The radicals on the right oftentimes are radical because they don't want to see crime. They don't want to see crime. The radicals on the left are the problem, and they're vicious, and they're horrible, and they're politically savvy.
This weekend, Trump called for Democratic donor George Soros to be jailed. Trump's top advisor, Stephen Miller, has also threatened to target and dismantle progressive organizations after Kirk's killing. Miller was on Fox News Friday.
The last message that Charlie Kirk gave to me before he joined his creator in heaven was he said that we have to dismantle and take on the radical left organizations in this country that are fomenting violence. That was the last message that he sent me before that assassin stole him from all of us. And we are going to do that.
Stephen Miller on Fox News. Supporters of Charlie Kirk have also launched sweeping campaigns to target people for making critical remarks about Kirk after his death. NPR reports at least 21 educators have already been fired, put on administrative leave, or placed under investigation by their employers. NBC News reports Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has urged his staff to identify any military members who mocked or condoned the killing of Kirk. For more, we're joined here in New York by Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, former foreign correspondent for The New York Times for over two decades, an award-winning author, a regular columnist for Sheer Post, where his most recent piece is headlined The Martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. His most recent book, A Genocide Foretold, reporting on survival and resistance in Occupy Palestine. Chris, welcome back to Democracy
Thanks,
Now!
Amy.
Explain your headline and what your concerns are. The martyrdom of Charlie Kirk, about the horrific murder of Kirk.
Well, Every, you saw that his murder weaponized even before the suspect was apprehended, and the quote-unquote radical left being blamed. So in every conflict that I covered, martyrs were kind of the lifeblood of violent movements. You hold up the martyr, and any shirking from purging the society through violence of those individuals or groups who are blamed for killing the martyr is a betrayal of the martyr. And we saw that happen instantly. That's how Kirk's casket goes on Air Force Two. He's awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The flags are half. I mean, and that's only accelerated. He comes out of the Christian nationalist movement, which I wrote about a decade ago in my book American Fascists: The Christian Right and the War in America. It's a movement I know very well. I'm also a seminary graduate, and I think we've reached a very frightening turning point. I think that we've already seen an assault on civil liberties, on institutions, universities, the media that are tasked with maintaining an open society. That will now be accelerated. I don't take any of this rhetoric lightly. I look at it as three phases. First, we saw those who protested the genocide attacked as anti-Semites, although a significant percentage, 20-30%, were probably Jewish. That was a way to shut down free speech. Then we saw undocumented workers being targeted and demonized as criminals and all this kind of stuff as a way to build Trump's version of the brown shirts, this rogue paramilitary group, ICE, with all of these detention centers. I mean, the budget is now larger than all federal law enforcement agencies combined, ICE. These detention centers are not going to be exclusively for undocumented workers. And now we're seeing the radical left demonized to shut down individuals and organizations that dissent from our the rapid consolidation of this police state or authoritarian state.
I want to go back to President Trump. This is the president speaking in Morristown, New Jersey, on the tarmac Sunday before boarding Air Force One.
Well, the problem is on the left. If you look at the problem is on the left. It's not on the right, like some people like to say on the right. The problem we have is on the left. And when you look at the agitators, you look at the scum that speaks so badly of our country, the American flag burnings all over the place, that's the left. That's not the right.
So that's President Trump before there is any evidence revealed, after Utah Governor Cox says we have to be very clear this is the work of one person. I mean, for example, when Timothy McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City building and killed over 160 people, people didn't say they're going to go after white Christian men. But what about what Trump, what Stephen Miller is doing and saying they're going after leftist organizations, they're going, talking about flag burning?
Yeah. When was the last flag burning? I don't remember one. Well, it's all fictitious. They've already started going after these organizations, but this has given them a green light to lift all constraints. And we've seen, a bill was the Florida, what was his name, Best or Most, I don't remember this, in the House, where groups that supposedly provide material support to terrorism can have their citizenship revoked. Remember Tom Cotton, right after 9/11, wanted to prosecute or go after mainstream media organizations, AP, CNN, The New York Times, for using pictures, graphic pictures from October 7th and from the genocide. So the process has already begun. Universities such as Columbia have already capitulated. And CBS is about to be turned over to a rabid Zionist and Barry Weiss, if everything goes through. We've already seen that assault. But now, in the name of the martyr, Charlie Kirk, I think that they will carry out activities that will essentially, in the end, and look to Miller, because he's the Stephen Miller is the one who's kind of organizing all of this, just as he has with the assault on undocumented workers and on immigrants. They will begin to shut down organizations. I'm sure they're not very happy with Democracy Now. They essentially intend to create a closed society, a police state, an authoritarian state under the rubric, with the kind of ideology of what I call Christian fascism. I mean, I label these Christian nationalists as heretics.
Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale capitalized on Kirk's death to advocate for a takedown of the Red-Green Alliance of communists and Islamists who he claims have united to destroy Western civilization. He proposes an app where citizens can upload pictures of crime and homelessness in exchange for property tax rebates.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of lunacy. You know, it's the old, the Vatican and the Masons and the communists, where these subterranean dark groups all come together. The kind of idea that there's a left, far left, radical left alliance with Islam is insane. It's absurd. But we've left the rational universe for one of magical thinking.
Mm-hmm. You quote in your piece Elon Musk, who wrote on X, "If they won't leave us in peace, then our choice is to fight or die."
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. All of this came out on my Substack, chrisedges.substack, CNN.com. So I found the quotes. Again, remember, this was before the suspect had been apprehended. There was almost a giddiness to it. I'm certain that there were people who were upset about his death, but Bannon and others, there was almost an excitement about launching the war's already been launched, but really prosecuting this war on what's left of our anemic institutions tasked with defending an open society.
You wrote in your piece, Kirk's killing is a harbinger of full-scale social disintegration. His murders, given the movement he represented, grounded in Christian nationalism, a martyr. Martyrs are the lifeblood of violent movements. Any flinching over the use of violence, any talk of compassion or understanding, any effort to mediate or discuss is a betrayal of the martyr and the cause the martyr died defending.
Yeah, and from the moment he was killed, that was essentially the role that he was given in terms of perpetuating this assault. Yeah.
Can you talk about what happened over the weekend at a vigil for Charlie Kirk in Huntington Beach, California, when the chant broke out, "White man, fight back." The intersection of white supremacy and Christian nationalism that Charlie Kirk represented. Again, we talk about this as he was horrifically assassinated this past week.
Yeah, well, that hyper-masculinity is key to the movement. And there's a great work by, I think, Thesawade called Male Fantasies, where he talks about the importance of hyper-masculinity to fascist movements. And Charlie Kirk, you know, he very much pushed this. He pushed Trump, for instance. He was one of the, you know, the principal agents of the Trump cult, fostering the Trump cult. And that hyper-masculinity is very much part of the Christian right. When I did my book, you would actually see pictures of kind of a very muscular Jesus. They embrace the jihad or the crusade against Muslims. These were during the wars in Iraq, writing Bible verses on guns and this kind of stuff. But that hyper-masculinity is key, and it appeals to disenfranchised white males. I mean, most of the country at this point, especially young people, are disenfranchised, but that it plays very well to white males.
Before we go, you sat here watching Dr. Sukkot, who is the head of nursing in Gaza at Nasser Hospital. Extremely gaunt. Yeah. Our radio audience couldn't see that. And you talked with me at the break about you having been a reporter in Salvador for the New York Times and
Times. But I wasn't with the New York Times in Salvador, but I was there for 5 years, and I shared my apartment with one of the founders of Medecins du Monde, Alina Margolis. She was in the Warsaw Ghetto. She was married to Mark Edelman, who was the deputy commander of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And every story she told me about the Warsaw Ghetto fits at this point with Gaza, including the forced starvation and baiting people in the ghetto to get on the transports by giving them 2 kilos of bread and marmalade, which is exactly they're using food, paltry amounts of food, as a bait to lure starving Palestinians to the south of Gaza and putting them into these concentration camps.
Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, award-winning author and activist, a regular columnist for Sheer Post. His most recent piece is headlined "The Martyrdom of Charlie Kirk." His most recent book, "A Genocide Foretold, Reporting on Survival and Resistance in Occupied Palestine." Up next, we go to Professor Judith Butler. Their latest piece, "When Universities Become Informants, a Practice from the McCarthy Era Makes an Ugly Return." Professor Butler's name was one of 160 given to the Trump administration by UC Berkeley in connection with, quote, anti-Semitism complaints. Stay with us.
I've been a lonely girl. Been a lonely girl, but I'm ready for the world. Oh, I'm ready for the world. I've been a heart for hire. I've been a heart for hire, and my love's on the funeral pyre. Oh, my love's on the funeral pyre. When will you help me out? You can't even pick me out of the crowd. Oh, 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 oh.
Hungry Ghosts by Linda Segarra of Hooray for the Riff Raff in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show looking at the Trump administration's escalating crackdown on academia and free speech. University of California, Berkeley said Friday it's provided Trump officials with the names of at least 160 students, faculty and staff complying with a federal investigation into alleged anti-Semitism on college campuses. On September 4th, UC Berkeley's top lawyer, David Robinson, sent a letter to each person whose name and information had been shared with the federal government. The letter said in part, the Education Department's Office of Civil Rights, quote, required production of comprehensive documents, including files and reports related to alleged anti-Semitic incidents, unquote. The latest comes after UC Berkeley Chancellor Rich Lyons was grilled by Republican lawmakers in Congress in July on anti-Semitism. This is Republican Congressmember Lisa McClain of Michigan questioning Lyons.
So why do you think Jewish students don't feel safe at your university in which you're in charge of? Just curious.
Well, I think part of safety for most people is some of it is physical. Some of it is more emotional. And am I being harassed, but not necessarily being confronted with potential violence? So I've admitted already there is anti-Semitism on campus.
That was Republican Congressmember Lisa McClain of Michigan questioning UC Berkeley Chancellor Rich Lyons in July. The Trump administration's targeted dozens of colleges across the country in aggressive crackdown on Palestinian solidarity activism and peaceful protests, threatening to cut off federal funding to academic institutions, persecuting in particular international students involved with the pro-Palestine movement. Scholars and others have likened these attacks to McCarthyism. Last week, a federal judge in Boston handed Harvard University a victory, saying the Trump administration's freeze on billions of dollars in federal research funding was illegal. In her ruling, Judge Allison Burroughs said she found it, quote, difficult to conclude anything other than that the Trump administration used anti-Semitism as a smokescreen for a targeted, ideologically motivated assault on this country's premier universities and did so in a way that runs afoul of federal law, the federal judge wrote. For more, we're joined here in New York by Judith Butler, philosopher, political commentator, gender studies scholar. Judith Butler is among the UC Berkeley faculty whose names were handed over to the Trump administration. They're distinguished professor in the Graduate School of the University of California, Berkeley, and the Hannah Arendt Chair at the European Graduate School. They're on the Academic Council of Jewish Voice for Peace. Judith Butler is the author of numerous books, most recently, Who's Afraid of Gender? And their new piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education is titled, When Universities Become Informants, A Practice from the McCarthy Era Makes an Ugly Return. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. So your name is one of 160 that UC Berkeley handed over to the Trump administration?
Yes. It's good to be here, Amy, and thank you so much for the coverage of Gaza that you've been providing so consistently from October 7th on and before. And it's extremely important for all of us that you continue to do so. Indeed, Gaza is the background for this particular issue at UC Berkeley because the students, the faculty, the staff who have opposed genocide or who have supported Palestinian rights and freedoms have been consistently accused of anti-Semitism, even though there is no good evidence that anti-Semitism is rampant on campus. to take a position against genocide is certainly not an anti-Semitic thing to do. Most Jews are against genocide, and we were taught to be against genocide. And we were taught as well that never again is a slogan that should apply to all people. But a genocide can't take place without suppressing political speech and without suppressing educational efforts that will explain what genocide is and how it's happening now. So part of what we're seeing is the accusation of anti-Semitism being used as a cudgel to suppress speech, to threaten people. It is, of course, appalling to me as a UC Berkeley faculty member who put 30 years into that institution, or almost, to see that the administration would hand over names and files when we ourselves, many of us at least, most of us, have never been apprised of the allegation. We still don't know what the allegation is. We don't have any access to the file. So the internal...
Was it the first time you learned that your name was handed over on Friday when you got the letter from the Cal lawyer?
Yes, it's the first time I learned that there might have been an allegation against me, and I just still don't know what the allegation is. So some students have gone through investigations. They know what the allegations are, and their files were forwarded. But most of us learned that there is an allegation, that it was forwarded, and we also learned that we have never known what the allegation is. We still don't know. We have no right to know. And the reason for that is that the internal protocol of the University of California, it has an Office for the Prevention of Harassment and Discrimination, it ceased to operate in light of this investigation. This investigation from the Department of Education took precedence over internal protocols. So we don't have any rights to know the allegation against us.
Mm. And how does it put you at risk?
Well, I am probably less at risk than most of the other people who are named, which is one reason I've gone public with this. But there are students named who are international students who are on visas. There are lecturers named who do not have protections under academic freedom, who also sometimes are on visas. They can be detained. They can be abducted. They can be, as we know from Tufts, from Columbia, they can be stopped on the street. They can be detained. They can be deported. They can lose their job. They can lose their place in the university, become expelled.
I wanted to play a clip before the end of the show. I mean, the coming together of all of what happened last week, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. In late May, he posted this exchange with a student on his official YouTube channel.
The humanities as they're configured are wretched to the core with anti-Western teaching, anti-American literature.
What do you mean, anti-Western teaching?
An emphasis on Herbert Marcuse and Angela Davis and Kimberly Crenshaw and Judith Butler and what? Derek Bell.
What's wrong with Angela Davis? She's a great woman.
With Angela Davis, the outspoken vocal communist?
Yeah.
She's a great woman.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's why kids shouldn't go to college, to learn from communists.
That was Charlie Kirk. We just have 30 seconds for your response.
Well, I'm very proud to be put in a club with Angela Davis and Kimberly Crenshaw. I mean, that's just beautiful. And I stand by them. And hopefully we're all able to continue educating and lecturing without further political repression.
I want to thank you, Judith Butler, for being with us. We're going to do part two after the show and post it at Democracy Now! Judith Butler is a philosopher and professor at the University of California, Berkeley. We'll link to their new piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education headlined, "When Universities Become Informants, a Practice from the McCarthy Era Makes an Ugly Return." That does it for our show. Very happy birthday to Sam Alkoff. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman.
Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.